Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 8, Episode 33. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and being as how I'm doing the intro today, that means David Todd is not with me. He is stuck, I think, on the runway at LaGuardia on his way home, running behind. So, a special treat for you on this Friday. We have Alex Kozora, also at SteelersDepot.com, sitting in for David Todd today. Alex, happy Friday, or is it?
Well, based on this past week, I'm sure it's not been a happy Friday for you or your Twitter timeline. Isn't that right, Dave?
I tell you, it's been, a lot of unhappy Steelers fans out there, and probably rightfully so. I mean, this is a game this past Sunday against the Jacksonville Jaguars that I had circled. You probably had circled. I know David had circled. I know probably 90% of the people listening to this show had circled. And that of course didn't happen. We'll get into a little bit. You know, we've already given our thoughts on that game, and I know you have on a kind of separate post and on your YouTube weekly kind of recap as well too. But now that you've had time to digest it, you know, almost a full week here, we'll go over your final thoughts on that game, and then you and I will start breaking down the game against the Chiefs. But I figured we'll start this Friday show off the way kind of David and I normally do, and that's going over the latest injury report. Today, of course, is Friday. The Friday final injury report is not out, but I think we can kind of decipher what went on Thursday and kind of look ahead to what Friday might look like there. Sitting out on Wednesday or on Wednesday and Thursday was guard Ramon Foster with a back. He has failed, of course, to practice both those days. Hard to guess right now at this point what's going to happen with him on Friday and what his final status will be for the game. I'm going to guess he's going to be questionable to doubtful. Maybe we'll see. If he does not play against the Chiefs, then it's easy to assume that B.J. Finney would start in his place at left guard. And people remember back, I think Finney, wasn't that his first career start against Kansas City last year in week mm-hmm. four, Alex? And if memory serves me, it was quite a performance he had in that game as well. So I'm not too concerned about that. Finney actually better on the move, even though Foster has shown us a lot, last season and a half or so of him being able to be on the move. Finney just as good on the move, and at least he has a little bit of experience going up against the Chiefs as well, too. So center Marquise Pouncey with a chest injury, practiced fully on Thursday after sitting out Wednesday. He looks good to go, as does Ryan Shazier. With a quadricep, he was listed as being limited in practice on Wednesday. Practice fully on Thursday, so should be good to go. And some good news, after practicing fully on Wednesday, tackle Marcus Gilbert and that hamstring injury of his, practice fully again on Thursday. Barring any kind of setback at this point, he should make a return to the lineup this week. And he's been out, of course, since, about the third quarter, fourth quarter of the week two game against the Minnesota Vikings. So, Chris Hubbard did some nice things when he was in there starting those games at right tackle, but I think better run blocker than he is pass protector. Gilbert, assuming Gilbert's back to the Gilbert that we know, should be a boost for that offensive line there. So any thoughts on any of that injury report and kind of looking ahead to the health of this team?
It's really remarkable, Dave, how healthy this squad is. You had the post, last week, I think, that, whenever we thought Gilbert was going to play, that it would be the first time since, week three of 2014 that all 22 starters were healthy and available. That might happen, you know, this week, you know, depending on what happens with Ramon Foster. But, yeah, I mean, the Steelers are in good shape, so certainly can't use injuries as an excuse for why this team's playing poorly.
Right, and no concerns about B.J. Finney having to start for Foster?
Nothing major. I mean, I'm a big Foster fan. I still think he's better than Finney. He's a lot more consistent. He's better in pass protection because he's a bigger guy, which always helps. He's 340 pounds, and it's hard to get around him. But, no, Finney's proven. He's been capable. You know, he's filled in as a tackle eligible since Hubbard's been starting. So, like you said, Finney played well against Kansas City last year. So, you know, they're high on him and with good reason.
All right, and based on some comments this past week from players and coaches, it sounds like we'll have two guys that have been inactive the last couple weeks in a helmet this week. That, of course, is James Harrison and wide receiver Eli Rogers. You know, we'll talk about who might not get a helmet in a little bit here, but you know, probably the way this defense has played against the run so far this season, and the fact that they are playing the Chiefs on Sunday, which means Eric Fisher at left tackle and James Harrison, you know, has really owned Eric Fisher over the course of, since Fisher has been in the league there. So, are you surprised by Debo potentially getting a helmet this week? And assuming he does, how do you think he's going to be used?
Definitely not surprised by it, Dave. Like you said, you know, his history against Kansas City, you know, it, I think speaks for itself. And just whenever you see the run defense miss some of the detail things, you know, that we've had a tackling issue in the past. But last week against Jacksonville, Keith Butler really said it was a run fit kind of assignment problem. So you bring in a veteran like James Harrison that, you know, isn't going to make those mistakes or isn't as likely to make those mistakes. And I just think the presence of James Harrison out there in uniform, I think it kind of forces other guys, other, you know, linebackers to be on their details and be on their P's and Q's. I think it just his presence alone is a big boost. And obviously what he can actually do on defense will help as well. Now, as to his use and the active inactives, kind of more difficult and less black and white solution. He's going to play on defense, obviously. I guess he's going to rotate in at some extent with right outside linebacker with TJ Watt. I just wonder how it's going to work with all the special teams aspect. Is it going to be Moats losing a hat and who's going to replace Moats and how that's going to work?
Do you expect Watt to start? And here's the way I theorize it. Watt gets a start, and if there's some early problems, against a run or Watt as a pass rusher, then the quote-unquote relief pitcher aspect comes into play here? Or do you think we're just going to see, okay, TJ, time for you to sit back a little bit and regroup and rotate these guys out maybe by series or something?
Yeah, I think there'll be a little bit, it's just a guess, but a little bit of a design of rotation. This could be a week where some guys kind of get scaled back a bit. We'll probably see Martavis Bryant snaps scaled back a bit. We'll probably see TJ Watt snaps scaled back a little bit just to keep him fresher and maybe lighten the load for him, give other guys a chance. So I could see something where Watt plays, you know, two of every three series. So, you know, it's about a two-third split. You know, Watt getting 66% of the snaps and Harrison the other third. That's just kind of my guess of how it's going to go.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to dress James Harrison and play him three or four snaps, right? I mean, you know, for what you're giving up, which, you know, a lot of people will probably say, oh, you're not giving up much on the back end with special teams by dressing Debo. They'll say that until a punt gets returned or a punt gets blocked or something like that.
You've been trying to tell them all week, Dave. I see it every day.
I mean, this is something to look for. You know, I think James Harrison could end up getting, you know, 20, 30 snaps in this game, potentially, depending on how things go. I mean, the Chiefs are the Chiefs would be foolish not to look at what's happened so far this season to the Steelers' defense. And I wrote about this before the Jaguars game about how teams have had their running success against the Steelers' 3-4 defense, the base unit. And I expected Jacksonville to use heavy personnel packages to kind of control the game, get those two big running backs of theirs loose, and that's exactly what they did. And the Steelers, while they for the most part, which sounds apologetic, controlled the Jaguars' running game, they didn't as a whole, of course, with several big runs. Keith Butler highlighted a few of those during his talk with the media on Thursday as well. So, this run defense has to get better. I would expect, and my train of thought there was that the Chiefs, were going to use a lot of heavy personnel, establish the run with Hunt, Kareem Hunt in this game, who's been absolutely fantastic this year, even more fantastic-er, if you will, on first down and 10. I mean, you getting 6 or 7 yards on first down, that sure makes life for Alex Smith and the rest of that offense a lot easier there. So, all right. Talking about the Steelers run defense, I had a fairly long post on Steelers Depot yesterday. You look at the Steelers run defense from a statistical standpoint and the yards per carry that they've given up this year, and they're ranked, what, second to the last in the league in that area. Is that a reflection? Well, obviously that stat does reflect it, but is it a good reflection? And you obviously have read my post, but is that a good reflection of really what the Steelers' run defense is? I mean, is the stat what this defense is?
Sure. I think it's valid. I think we have a bit of a disagreement on how we use that stat. And I get that it can be inflated by allowing some of the big runs. But, your run defense is the sum parts of what you do. And allowing some of those huge runs has been a huge issue for Pittsburgh. Maybe the number one issue. It's that popcorn that Mike Tomlin talks about where, yeah, you get a couple good stops, but it's all for naught when you allow that 20 to 50 plus yard run. That's been a huge issue. I think the safety, the alley defenders have struggled to keep a lid on some of these plays, and that's what makes a good run defense strong, is those 8 yard runs not becoming 80 yard runs. And that's been a problem too often for Pittsburgh this year.
Yeah, it makes, my argument is just the long runs. If you do a better job of getting guys to the ground and letting them get 12, 14, 15 yards instead of 50 and 90 and what else do they have, 38 or something like that. They're mm-hmm. What do they have, like 5 runs over 25 against them, and those, and look, a 90 yard run this early in the season can easily inflate things. But yeah, there is no stat that says, well, but mm-hmm. But that's kind of my argument with them is, look, the stats are what they are. I mean, you still have to count those long runs. But if they can get those under control, I think we're going to see a much different, defense here. And of course, that's a big if here. I mean, the week in, week out, it seems to be, whether it's Baltimore or Jacksonville or Chicago or trying to think, seems like Dalvin Cook had one long one in that game against Minnesota as well, too. They've got to put a cap, regardless of what the argument may or may not be and whether or not that stat, people think that stat is or isn't reflective of this defense. They've just got to put a cap on these big explosive mm-hmm. runs.
Now, I mean, you're right that you have to watch the tape and see if that yards per carry is exactly representative of the whole run defense. Is it an issue where they just had one bad game? It's not for Pittsburgh, but just generally speaking, you have to look at this. I thought you made a good point about Jacksonville last week about their run defense being better than the numbers show, because you look at that Jets game, they gave a couple huge runs, but one of them was a weird fluky play where Powell kind of fell down. Everyone thought the play was dead, and he was ruled he wasn't whistled down, so he just kind of walked into the end zone the rest of the 50 yards. So there are fluky things that come up that you have to kind of throw the caveat out there. But I get the point about if you take away the 5 biggest runs, the Steelers are allowing, what was it, like 3.56, was that the number, yards per carry? I can't remember, Dave.
Against the other running backs on those other runs.
Yeah, and you take out the 5 long runs. What was it, like 3.5,
yeah,
3.6?
Yeah, I'll have to pull that up here. But, yeah, that was, it's been my whole notion is that it's been pretty much feast or famine with mm-hmm. them. When you look at let's see, if you take away those five runs and look at the other 120 runs by opposing running backs and opposing running backs only, you'll see a more respectable yards per carry average of 3.56. And additionally, I still think, boy, the NFL has got, you know, in a stats-driven world that we are now with all these great, you know, innovative stats that we have now, it pains me to keep people referencing just yards per carry and stuff like that. I'm a big fan of run success rates because, like it or not, a two-yard run on third and one goes in the books as a two-yard run. But that is a successful run. And I like to look – that's why I like to look at these success rates. And opposing running backs only have a 36.7% run success rate on 120 of the 125 total runs this season. And, you know, that's I think I wrote this that article this past week from the aspect of trying to also – and I didn't probably tie it in well – that, you know, I don't think the Jacksonville Jaguars' run defense is as bad as what many were framing it to be ahead of that game. Now, are they bottom third of the league? Probably. But, you know, were they worst in the league? You know, I think not. But regardless, this Steelers run defense has got to do a better job as a whole, because those long runs still count. And, boy, they're not going to get a week off on this coming Sunday against the Chiefs.
Absolutely not. No, Kareem Hunt's such a good running back. I mean, he's averaging 6.3 yards per carry, which is such an absurd number. He has seven runs of 20-plus. There's no other team in the NFL that has seven runs of 20-plus. He's doing it by himself. It's a week where you have to tackle because Hunt's a tough runner. He's a big guy. Steelers have had trouble facing some of these big guys, whether that's Alex Collins or Fournette or even Chris Ivory last week. He's got great contact balance. That's the first thing that always stuck out to me about Kareem Hunt was his ability to run through contact, keep his balance, and get that extra yards after contact. He does a really good job of that. So Steelers certainly have their hands full. They have to keep a lid on the missed tackles. If they miss more than, I don't know, 16, 17 tackles in this game, you can kiss this a chance for a win goodbye just because the Chiefs are going to make you pay for it.
Yeah, and if they let Hunt get eat healthy on first down as well, too, you can probably forget about it as well, too, because they've got to – and we'll get more into the breakdown of that game here in a little bit. All right, with Debo getting a helmet this week, the question becomes who sits down. I think the candidates are possibly Arthur Motes. I threw out there Xavier Grimble as a possibility. If you look back to week two, the last time that James Harrison dressed along with the rest of the linebackers, the Steelers only dressed two tight ends. However, Vance McDonald was injured that week, and you know, that could be a good reason of why they only dressed two. But Grimble only played, I think, two special team snaps this past week. At one of those three punts, he's only been, I think, playing on the punt coverage team. One of those three punts the Steelers had, they replaced Grimble with, I think, Sean Davis on one of those wings. So they, if you're looking at a special guy that plays special teams, it's probably. And look, you got Gilbert coming back. Hubbard can go back to being an extra tight end and all like that. To me, it would make the most sense to give Grimble's helmet to James Harrison.
Yeah, I mean, that's either Grimble or Motes, and that's kind of, I guess, an easy statement to say. You know, if you sit in Motes, you have to replace his helmet on special teams, a couple of the starter spots there. My big thing is the punt coverage because he's a starter there, and Tyreek Hill's a major threat in that group. Now, Tomlin alluded to it, and they've done it in the past. I expect some starters to play on the coverage units this week because the Chiefs are so potent there. So I think we've seen Mike Mitchell play against the Chiefs in the past. So I think you said T.J. Watt was playing some of the punt team last week. That could continue this week. He could take Moat's spot. So if I had to guess, I think Grimble's you make a good argument for it. I could totally see it. I think it's going to be Moats. I think they're going to sit Moats.
Yeah, on that one snap that they had Sean Davis play on the right wing in place of Grimble, T.J. Watt was the left tackle in place of Arthur Moats. But that was one snap and one snap only out of three punts against the Jaguars. So it's probably going to be an either-or between Moats or Grimble, right?
And Davis has started the year at that right wing on punts before. Grimble came in. I'm not sure what the reasoning was. It was just because of, you know, Davis playing the snaps that he was. But so
maybe it's that ankle too.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, so that's generally Davis's spot. So if Davis is deemed healthy and ready to go on that unit, then, you know, Grimble would lose even more of a hat. So it's just a question of your numbers. And Rosie Nix did play some tight end last week, and he was out there. So maybe they decide that Grimble's even more expendable.
All right. And Hunter, of course, is going to sit if Eli Rogers is active, right?
And thank God for that, because that experiment is just, you know, Justin Hunter, I know he got so much hype during camp. I was trying to tell people to calm down. Hunter's his whole life, his whole career has just been kind of all bark, no bite. And we saw that again.
Did you think that was a wrong? Did you hear me talk about that one play, that one target? I forget how many he had against Jacksonville. Not many, but did you think that was a wrong route by Hunter? On that outside throw?
Definitely screwed it up. He did it all during camp, so no surprise now.
Okay, I thought that as well, too, and said as much, I think, on that last show. So, yeah, Hunter goes down this week, so I think the only question becomes, does Ramon Foster dress? And if he doesn't, then Matt Filer should get his helmet instead there. David and I have obviously broken down this Jaguars game, and I know you have on your weekly videos as well, too. We've had, you know, almost a full week to digest this. Kind of your overarching thoughts on that loss to the Jaguars.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure fans don't want to get into it too much. I'll just go through it quickly. You know, it was a game that played right into the Jaguars game plan. They have to do a couple things right for them to succeed. They have to keep the game close early. They have to probably win the turnover battle. They have to do well in situational football, third down red zone, and they can get a lead in late in the second half, then they can go with their ground and pound rushing attack and kind of wear defenses down. And all those things ended up happening for them. You know, obviously they get the pick sixes, they're able to get the lead, and they're able to just churn clock because, you know, as I said, leading up to that week, Jacksonville has a really physical offensive line, not the best offensive line, but a really physical group. They have a couple big running backs that'll wear you down, and that's what happens. Steelers play great run defense early, but you just get run on time and time again. By the time it's the fourth quarter, you're pressing because you're trying to make a play. You're worn down. You're tired. Your technique wanes. Your effort wanes. And the Jaguars ended up rolling all over them. So, you know, I could go through a million of the issues. We've kind of covered it. I know you and David covered it really well throughout the week. But, you know, it was a game plan that worked out perfectly for Jacksonville.
Second and third level problems mostly with the Steelers' defense against the run.
I mean, you know, when you have some of those big explosive plays, I kind of look at it as everything. It's hard to say just one level. You know, it's an issue of guys doing too much. Keith Butler talked about the 90-yard touchdown by Fournette. He said guys weren't doing their jobs. They were being too aggressive.
It's still hard to figure out who was at fault there on that 90-yard run. I mean, is that Burns not pinching that edge, you know, forcing that edge enough. He didn't want anything to do with that block on
that fullback. Yeah,
and I can't rightly. I mean, you can't rightly blame him for that. Did Sean Davis attack the hole too quickly to take on that lead blocker there? Was T.J. Watt, supposed to straight up on that? You know, it's hard. Ryan Shazier, looks like Ryan feels right, in my opinion, but, you know, not knowing exactly. Of all the runs, that's the hardest one, I think, to kind of dissect to see who didn't do what right.
Yeah, I can't really figure it out for sure. I thought someone made a good point that Vince Williams didn't follow the pulling guard, which is usually what ends up happening. So, you know, you end up, because when that guard pulls, it creates an extra gap on the front side, and there was no one came over to fill it. It could have been on five guys. I'm not really sure. The one thing I will say that I was disappointed about that play that I can say with 100% confidence is Sean Davis quit on that run by the 40-yard line, and Hayden runs it down. That's a really bad look for Sean Davis. I know it's end of the game. I know he's tired. He might be banged up, but, dude, you got to finish that run. Look what Vance McDonald did just a couple weeks earlier. So, you know, I've been a little disappointed with the way Davis has played. He's been better than last year because he's been a little healthier. He's got more experience, but his play's not where it needs to be, and that effort play was a really bad look.
And Keith Butler also referenced the other two runs to the right and left edges there were kind of killers as well too. And I think you wrote a little bit this past week about the force players there. I think Bud Dupree was responsible on one to his side, and I'm trying to remember
Watt was the other side,
and Watt got hooked, right?
Yeah, because well, they're running it's that over front or 3-4 over that they've been doing that has not had much success. That I think they don't get enough practice with it, and guys end up losing their run fits. They ran both those examples we're talking about came out of their over front. They ran it three times against Jacksonville against the run, and they gave up 31 yards, 19 and 12 yard gain. So you know, I think you just got to keep it simple, play it straight up. I think you've seen Butler get away from some of those shifts because he ran it a lot against Chicago, ran it a lot early in the season. It's kind of scaled it back because I think he realizes that it's not working as well as it should. I think Butler's been a little too cute with the run stunt. Some of those fire X's on first down, when they hit, they're great. When they don't, you're getting the second level easy because there's no inside linebacker there. That happened on at least one 12-yard gain that Fournette had against the Steelers last week. Some of the run stunts have worked, but I think I just want to play it straight up. The talent is there on the front seven. This is a really talented front seven. It's a really capable front seven. So I don't think you have to be super cute on what you do. I think if you play it straight up, you can be successful.
All right, offensive game plan up until the second pick six.
Obviously you want to see him run the football a little bit more. I'm not going to deny that, but I think there's a lot of context that has to get thrown in there. Is that Jacksonville was making Pittsburgh throw the football. They were loading the box. They knew how they wanted to force Pittsburgh to win, and the Steelers ran a ton of screens and, you know, those RPOs and stuff like that. So, you know, how many passes did they have where the ball traveled down the field? You know, I think that number could really get cut significantly if you looked at that, instead. You know, obviously Ben struggled. I mean, I don't know how much you want to get into it, but, you know, I thought it was just a combination of everything. I thought Haley didn't call a great game. I thought obviously Ben struggled. Connor was bad in pass protection. You know, that pressure helped cause the first pick. But yeah, got to be better all around.
Should screens and flip passes be considered runs?
I think, yeah, maybe, you know, at least there should be some sort of, you know, we have all the next gen stats and stuff. There's got to be something in there because they ran probably like 10 of those the whole game. So if you were able, you know, before the second pick, Ben had thrown the ball 35 times and Bell had 13 carries. But if you look at, if you take away the screens, you probably only have like 25 and 13, which is, you know, a little bit closer. And Bell, to the credit, got involved in the passing game as well. It's not like the Miami game last year where Bell and AB were completely shut out. In that game last year, they touched the ball 20 total times. Some of that came in garbage time real late. Last week, they touched the ball 35 times. Bell had it 25 touches, you know, 15 and 10. So Bell got involved in the offense. So I care less about a lack of a run game as long as 26 still getting the ball, and he has. So, I mean, again, they needed to run the football more. I don't deny that, but I don't freak out about balance. I don't freak out about that stuff as much as other people do. I just want to do what's effective to move the football and score points.
As I stated a couple times this past week, if you really want to circle some bad play calling, whether it Ben, Haley, or whatnot, it has to be on that at the end of that sixth possession down in the red zone. You know, you're splitting Bell out wide, and you're leaving Roosevelt Nix alone in the backfield. Everybody knows he's not getting the ball. In that play. You know, you run that little bubble.
That out and up, yeah.
Tunnel screen to Juju. Yep. Juju there, and Ben looked like he wasn't happy with how Juju attacked that, but it wouldn't have mattered. It still wasn't going to go into the end zone there on that play. The second play was another kind of quick slant to Le'Veon Bell, who was lined up wide again. And then on the third one, the out and up in that short area space. I mean, that, whoever called that one, that's just not a high percentage play there on a third and goal situation. And then I think you can make an argument of what happened there the first drive of the second half. Now I can't remember if that was a hurry up mode or not. And then after the first pick six as well too. I mean, if you want to decipher down where some, i.e. either play calling or execution or both really, really hurt this Steelers offense, it was probably in those areas more than any others. And look, Le'Veon Bell, as we've seen most of the season, they haven't run him well. at times, especially when offensive linemen have not been on the move. And they tried to get some offensive linemen on the move against Jacksonville a few times. And, boy, David DeCastro was just awful in that game. And I don't know why they got away from it, you know, in there. But it seems like most of their success this year with Le'Veon Bell has been with offensive linemen on the move.
Yeah, and I think you might see a return to that this week. I think it was tough against Jacksonville, and I'm glad they didn't do more, but I wish actually they would have done less of it because, you know, it's like Minnesota where they have a really athletic linebackers. You know, they had Telvin Smith and Miles Jack, and they can really flow sideline to sideline really well. So it's tough to get out on the perimeter because you have guys who are able to get over the top of the guard, and you have your backside guys shooting, you know, through the gap created by the pulling guard. So I don't think it was really an effective idea. I wish they would have done less of some of those guys on the move just because I don't think it was conducive to success against Jacksonville. But hopefully against Kansas City, a little different team, it might work a bit better.
All right. Any, you know, are you concerned about, I mean, it's hard not to be concerned about Ben right now, but, you know, when you go back and look at those interceptions and what happened on each of them, much like talking about defensive stats and removing the big plays, you still have to account for those five interceptions he had. You know, outside of him not hitting the long ball this year and, you know, a couple other, you know, poor decisions, what I'm getting at is where are you at on Ben Roethlisberger entering this week?
It's just confusing because physically he looks fine. The arm's there. I mean, yeah, he's lost some mobility, but, you know, it's been like that. It's not like he's completely lost it. There's not been any sort of major injury that's affected him. It's not, you know, an RG3 kind of thing. It's just weird kind of mental stuff where he kind of gets stuck on his first progression. You know, when defenses disguise their coverage well, he's just having trouble getting off his read. It's not always even just AB either. It can just be anyone. You know, he just looks a little unsure back there. So, you know, I mean, he can bounce back and he's going to have good games. You know, it's just, you know, how can he be the consistent guy that his team needs? But I think you said it well, Dave, that they just have to get this deep ball working because that's kind of the linchpin to the success. Creating those chunk plays, shorting up the field, not having to go 10 to 12 play drives every single time, where you can hit that 50-yard, you know, plus ball, that changes the dynamic of the whole drive. So they just have to find a way to do that.
You know, with their route combinations against Jacksonville, I don't think we saw many, if any, switch routes in there. You know, is that to try to make things easier on Roethlisberger? Is it because of you know, worried about guys being on details and or what? You know, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, the video that I had, my kind of biggest gripe with Haley was just kind of how some of the route combinations weren't working in tandem, and that's kind of been my gripe with Haley. You know, throughout his whole tenure, is that sometimes these things are a little too independent, where it's just kind of three verticals or mirrored routes, and you're not really setting things up to stress defenders and make safeties have them make choices. I thought it was a little too simplistic against a tough Jacksonville secondary that's hard to play straight up, especially on a day where your guys are just straight up struggling. AB aside, so it's not even one specific concept, but. You know, I do want to see him get back to some of the basic stuff that's worked so well in the past, whether that's a spot concept or Hank. It's been money on first down, some of the divide routes, that indie post play that they ran last year in 2015 to a high degree of success. Just, you know, where safeties having to make choices, some of those levels concepts where you have multiple crosses at different levels across the field to make a safety bite, maybe open something up underneath. Just do something to help scheme these guys open a little bit better than what they're getting, because they're not really getting that open.
And the thing too with the inconsistency and lack of rhythm that this offense has had this year, at no one point that I can remember, maybe outside of the game against Baltimore, it's hard for an offensive coordinator to build off of other plays when those initial plays don't have success.
Yeah, they tried to run that fake bubble, Y seam ball. They ran it twice last week. I think it was incomplete, but one was definitely incomplete to Vance on the first drive. I think they tried it again later in the game, and they didn't throw it because it was well covered. So, You know, the opportunities have been there, though. Pressure definitely hurt things. You look at the first interception, you know, Ramsey had against McDonald. There was pressure there by Connor that kind of forced the ball that was early and a little behind. We talked about the one where Juju got open on a double move deep downfield off play action. But there was pressure allowed by Hubbard that forced Ben to scramble for just a one-yard gain. So, I mean, there has been stuff that's been open. It's just been a combination of things that have prevented some of those deep plays from happening.
All right, you think people are tired about talking about Jacksonville game now?
I think you and I are probably tired of talking about Jacksonville. Let's go to KC.
Hopefully they haven't shut this podcast off. we won't blame them if they have, probably. But I just want to get some of your thoughts on what happened there and some of my final thoughts on there as well, too. All right, the Steelers will play an undefeated Chiefs team in Kansas City. And as we said, this is not going to be a picnic at all. However, as I like to say, this is a banged up Chiefs team right now. You have Travis Kelce. It sounds like he's going to play. He was in concussion protocol this week, but he practiced fully on Thursday, assuming he doesn't have a setback on Friday. No way he doesn't play against the Steelers on Sunday. Now, they did lose Chris Conley to an Achilles injury last week. He's not going to play. Justin Houston's a big name to watch here on Friday. He has missed the last two practices with a calf injury. That would be huge if the Steelers don't have to face Justin Houston on Sunday. One of their guards is kind of questionable right now as well, too, but I don't think that's a huge deal for them. An interesting name, and Mitch Morse. They might get center Mitch Morse back this week. He's missed the last three games, I think. But regardless, you would not even know Mitch Morse has not been in there, if you ask me, and look at that tape so far. Albert Wilson, the backup, who's expected to take over at wide receiver for Chris Conley. He's been bothered by a knee, but it sounds like he's going to be good to go for Sunday. Perhaps maybe the biggest name on the Chiefs injury report right now is wide receiver Tyreek Hill. He was added to that report on Thursday with a hamstring injury. Boy, those are tough midweek like that. We'll see what happens to Hill the rest of this week. And, you want to talk about a big loss on offense for them, it would be Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, special teams as well. I know he's off kicks, I think, this year, but he's doing punts and obviously everything he brings offensively. So, yeah, a lot of big names to watch out for. Houston, Kelce, Hill, even Morse. I think Fulton's played well, like you said, but, Zach Fulton's their center right now replacing him. He's a big guy. He's a guard. He's like 6'5 or 6'6. So, that's a chance for Hargrave to really have success if Morse can't go. So, certainly going to pay attention to that Chiefs injury report today and tomorrow.
I'm tired of pointing out oppositions being out without certain offensive linemen because the Steelers certainly hadn't taken advantage of it.
yeah, that's been bad.
Chicago, I think, definitely Jacksonville was missing a piece there.
Center.
Yeah, so
Baltimore's always hurt. You should have Chicago
Baltimore,
had problems.
That's a perfect example there as well, too. When you look at this this game from a Steelers offensive perspective, I wrote a little bit about the Chiefs defense, or at least talked about it on Twitter there so far. Their rush defense, I think the stats do reflect who they are as a rush defense. They have not been great so far. And when you combine that with the fact that these two teams really, even though they're not in the same division, they kind of know each other. Bob Sutton's been there for several years as a defensive coordinator. Sure, a few pieces of the puzzle have changed there personnel-wise, but they pretty much still are the same Chiefs defense, I think, that we've studied the last couple of years here for sure. And you look back at Le'Veon Bell's history against the Chiefs being able to run on them. This is a Steelers offense that even had B.J. Finney in there last year that was able to run on them. We should see a lot of Le'Veon Bell in this game, and we should see some offensive linemen on the move as well.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely a team that you can run on. I mean, I think there is a talent up front, that front three for Kansas City, whether that's Benny Logan at nose tackle or Alan Bailey, who's a super underrated defensive end. Chris Jones has taken over games at times this year. Bailey's a high snap count guy. He's playing 76% of the time. You have Derek Johnson in the middle. The Chiefs are an interesting team because they basically run dime whenever they go sub package, because they kick out in inside linebacker and they move Daniel Sorensen, number 49, into the box, who's filled that role in the past because they haven't really had a guy opposite Derek Johnson. But, you know, I think it's less about the talent just for the Chiefs on defense, but the mentality that they have, and they have a really good defensive coordinator in Bob Sutton. This is an aggressive team, a physical team. They play with an edge. They can create turnovers. They're not going to give you a whole lot of easy stuff. So whatever the Steelers do, whatever the Steelers get, it's going to be hard-earned.
Do you come out just running the ball and this time, much assuming the game stays close, much like the game against Baltimore there to start with, even if you're not having maybe the success that you want, do you just try to deal with the third and fives and the third and sixes instead of, I think the one thing right now that needs to stop, and I don't know what you think about as well, too, these first and 10 deep shots by Ben probably have, I understand you see the matchup outside, and they open up the game against Jacksonville with that as well, too, taking a deep shot. I understand that you have to keep opposing defenses honest there, especially when they do stack the box and all, but until Ben gets his deep ball going, to me, the risk-reward factor there, it just isn't high enough reward to offset the risk here on early downs. So if you want to throw on first down, it needs to be high percentage stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. It's just if the matchup's there, if the safety's not over the top, if you have AB or Bryant one-on-one, I still say go for it just because that's the matchup. It's the right play to make, even if it hasn't hit yet. You're not going to hit until you hit. So, I'm all for trying when the situation calls for it. Don't force it, of course. But yeah, no, I agree to the larger point. Yeah, you have to get the run game going. You don't want to be stuck in these third and longs. That's when the pass rush for the Chiefs gets home. They're going to play a lot of cover one on third and longs. That's where Ben's going to struggle the most. So, you have to be able to get just successful plays on first down.
Does Ben need to become more old Alex Smith and like I said on the other podcast and not force the third and 11s?
Yeah, I'm all for, taking it short of the sticks. If you have to, let guys create plays, after the catch. The Steelers have a great threat of yak ability. So, yeah, I certainly can't force it. But hopefully Steelers just stay out of those third and 11s. That's kind of the first thing I'm looking at, how to avoid that entirely.
And here's the thing, outside of Antonio Brown, not a lot of yak to speak of this year. I mean, not even with Le'Veon Bell, Mm-hmm. That's a lot of hidden yardage right there that they're not getting. Martavis Bryant is not on track, as you said, and I agree with you. I think Ben pretty much said as much this past week. Martavis probably going to lose some snaps this week. We might see some juju on the outside in addition to the slot. And then Eli Rogers, they need a big-ish game out of Eli Rogers this week, right?
Yeah, probably. It's probably going to come situationally where you're going to get some third down plays where he can make his money. Where again, the Chiefs are going to play a lot of man coverage. Ben's spoken so highly of what Eli can do versus man to man. Which I get. He's a really good route runner that sells his routes well and is able to create space, even though he's not super talented. Physically, if you look at just his combine numbers and things like that. So it might not. It might be like a Kobe Hamilton game for Eli where he's not going to catch five passes, but he'll catch two, and he'll come on third and 10+, and he'll make a big play and keep a drive alive. So that's kind of my goal for Eli Rogers, is to make that big situational play.
And, of course, you cannot go 0-3 or what was it last year in divisional round playoff game against Kansas City, 0-4 in the red zone. I mean, that what changes would you like to see inside the red zone?
That out and up, please burn it with fire. It's the worst concept ever. I never want to see it run again.
And I really shouldn't even say inside the red zone, inside the 10, right?
Yeah, definitely. Because they move the ball a little bit, but once they get real close to the goal line, everything kind of gunks up and they haven't been effective. Again, just some of the route combinations. I think guys are running a little too independently right now. Don't put Rosie Nix in the backfield. if you want to do some stuff like that, go with a pony set and put Connor or Watson and split Bell out. It'll give you the better threat of the run. But that spot concept that Haley's run in the past has been really successful. And the spot concept is a corner curl flat kind of triangle read, really easy for the quarterback to make. The linebacker sits, you can throw the flat, linebacker wide, and you can throw the curl, the spot route. And if, you know, both are covered, you can usually hit the corner because you might have leverage. So just scheme guys open, I think, a little bit. And then go back to, you know, I'm sure they have, but go back to your seven shots in training camp and figure out which plays were the most effective. That happened early in the year with the tight end screens and the shovel passes that they were able to get touchdowns off of. Go back to that drawing board and say, what do we do early? What was our day one install for seven shots? And, you know, what do we feel was the best plays that we ran throughout camp? And just kind of, you know, keep it simple.
Why not play around with Watson and Bell in the backfield at the same time? Depending on what you get, you can still split Bell out at that point. And then, look, I mean, high diddle send Watson up the middle for three, you know?
Yeah, definitely. You know, he's such a downhill presence that he's just going to fall forward every time. So you got 240 pounds going forward, and with a little bit of momentum out of the gun. Yeah, I'm all for it.
Connor hurt his chances at getting a little bit more playing time this past week?
Definitely. I mean, you just can't miss him pass pro like that. You know, you can't give up that big play. And obviously, once that happened, he didn't see a snap until the last series. So, you know, I'm all for playing Watson a little bit in some situational football. You know, they've done it in short yardage. He's 2-2 on the year. And then just real quick for the offense, you know, I talked about early in the week, 10 personnel, four receiver sets. You're going to have Eli back. You know, obviously the tight ends aren't giving you a ton outside of their red zone stuff. You know, that'll help open things up for Bell by going four wide, forcing the defense to lighten the box, go into sub package. It's going to create more one-on-one matchups. The Chiefs don't have a ton of depth at cornerback right now. I don't even know who their fourth corner would be at this point. So maybe you can get Eli on up fourth corner or linebacker or Sorensen or whatever, and you might be able to create something from there. So do it 10 times. You know, Ben's been successful with four receivers on the field. He's 9 of 10 for 135 yards. So, you know, keep at it.
Yeah, we haven't seen that a lot. We saw it, you know, heavy in the first, first game? And then that was it, right? I mean, well, I think one play since then, two plays since then.
I think two, real limited.
And gotten away from it, and most definitely since Eli has been down. You know, field position, I think, is going to play a huge part in this game as well, too. And you just cannot make mistakes in your own end of the field. And, you know, I lean on Bell heavily and then kind of go from there. Vance McDonald, I mean, I wrote about him this past week. What a weird mm-hmm. bunch of stats that is. I know it's not a large sample size there. But, man, when he's on the field – the offense moves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's the numbers? 8 yards a pass and 4.5 a run or something like that. It's been successful.
Yeah, if they could get it. Well, you see these tight ends around the league, man. You saw it last night with Zach Ertz, you know, with Philadelphia. You know, do they need to get away from more heavy personnel this week? Do they need to try to run more out of 11?
I don't know. I want to run out of 10 some because I want to try that with a tight end, you know, gone and you're having everybody out, you know, go 2x2 and stack guys wide and try to run it like that. I think it's just about variety of it, not doing the same thing over and over. I think they need to do – I think actually you made the point, Dave, which is trying to do more pre-snap, a little bit more window dressing, moving the tight ends around and doing some shifts and motions just to try to see how defenses respond, if they respond incorrectly, or just you learn information based off of their response. So you can, you know, attack off that new information. So I think it's less about the personnel, but exactly what you're running, how you're running it, and how you're dressing it up.
And I think you can dress it up a little bit, especially if you use Juju on the outside. You can, and we've seen a little bit of that already, right? Him, mm-hmm. Or especially in the preseason, I think, you know, him coming in motion behind the quarterback. You know, a little bit what the Steelers are going to see on the opposite side of the football. You know,
that's what I was going to say. That's what Chicago did. The Kansas City is going to do it. They're going to do that ghost motion. They're going to do a lot of shifts. Cleveland does it better than anybody. They're going to do it.
New England does it a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you. I, a little bit more window dressing in there instead of just lining up in 12 personnel and saying, here, stop it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Kind of thing there. I mean, love the pin and pulls. Need to see some pin and pulls this week. I expect to see DeCastro and Finney both on the move to either side as well, too. Okay, flipping over to the defensive side of the ball. you know, it's Hill, Hunt, and Kelsey. I mean, that's all you need, I think, if you're Alex Smith there. Kelsey, the Steelers have done a fairly good job against him, though, the last couple of games. It'll be interesting to see how they attack him this week. But once again, we expect the Chiefs to come heavy in this game and keep the Steelers' base on the field.
Yeah, especially if they have some of the injuries there. Obviously, losing Conley, you know, might convince them to play some more, you know, 21, 22. They have a fullback. You know, not a lot of teams have a fullback. They have a good one in Anthony Sherman, so they can go 22. They'll push in some tough spots. You know, well, they'll go, 11 personnel, but they'll walk Kelsey out, and so they'll lighten the box, kind of like what 10 personnel would do, so it's tough to stop. They'll go 22 They'll go 22 personnel, and they'll walk Kelsey out. And now you have a linebacker or a cornerback on a tight end. So they give you a lot. Pre-snap, they're going to do a lot of stuff with Hill, motioning and faking the jet. They'll do the same with Albert Wilson. He has a carry off a jet sweep this year. They'll do a read option with Alex Smith. So, Steelers definitely have to read their keys well, and something that they've struggled with from time to time this season.
And then, Hunt. I mean, we opened up pretty much talking about him today. You can't let him run downhill, plain and simple. I mean, first down is going to be key down, as it is obviously in most every games. But, I mean, if he's getting 4, 5, 6, 7 yards on first down consistently, it's not going to matter. It's really because it keeps the playbook open up for Alex Smith. All right, Alex Smith. You heard us talk to Adam Teicher the other day, Alex, and I asked him, quarterbacks, especially as long as they've been in the league as he has, generally don't change their stripes. Is it just the situations are better with him? Have you noticed, he's obviously completing more deep balls. That's helping his game quite a bit. And, I mean, he seems to be throwing for the chains more on 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7, situations there. Is there anything outside of that other than them just executing a lot better and having a good, solid, consistent running game that's made Alex Smith what Alex Smith is right now?
I think it's mostly the execution, but I will say, they haven't had a dynamic guy like Tyreek Hill in quite some time. So obviously what he was able to start doing last year and then this year, he kind of became a full-time, a huge part of the offense. So that just opened things up so much more. And they're a big yak threat, too. They've been able to complete the deep ball, of course, like you said, Dave. But I think they have like 586 yards a yak this year, and that's double their opponent. I bet you it's one of the top numbers in the league. So they're able to get guys in space and create explosive plays off of little swing passes and things like that. So it's a combination of things, but they're just being, Dave, they turned the ball over on the first play of their season against New England back in week one. Hunt fumbled the football. They have not turned the ball over since. They're great on third down. They're efficient in the red zone. They take care of the football. They hit big shots. Alex Smith is completing passes at a 76% rate. I mean, they are checking every box you could hope for. They're what the Steelers were supposed to be. That's the frustrating part of it.
All right. Twitter user Zach Smith sent me a link to a good article by Kevin Seifert on ESPN.com. From a few days ago. It's dated October 2nd. It says, think Alex Smith has changed his approach. Not so fast. He goes into, and I'm assuming these stats are prior to the last week's game there. At the time, Alex Smith was tied 2nd in TDs, 1st in least interceptions, leading the league in TD throws of 20 yards or more, completion percentage 1st, TD percentage 1st, and it goes on to break down his passer rating differential versus his QBR ranking there. And then on later on down in the article, it says, and once again, I'm assuming these were pre-game against the Texans there. Yards after catch per completion, 1st in the league at 7.54. That's incredible yards after catch right there. Drops at the time, 0, tied for 1st in the league. First down on 3rd downs, tied for 28th in the league. Sack percentage, 32nd in the league at 12%. Now, he's still sackable for sure. And he's holding on to the ball a little bit longer than I think we've seen Alex Smith hold on to it in the past there. When you look at his attempts behind the line of scrimmage, ranks first in the league, or did as of a couple of games ago. 36% of his attempts are at or behind the line of scrimmage. Surprisingly, Aaron Rodgers is second, or was second at the time there. You got to get him. You got to get Alex Smith in predictable situations. You got to get him in third and six or long, period.
Yeah, and like you said, that was a good point. I think the one weakness for the Chiefs offense, and there aren't many, but they have been sacked a lot. Alex Smith has been taken down 17 times this season. So this pass rush has to get home. It's going to be tough to blitz him because they're going to throw the swing pass so much. They're going to be able to hit that small ball, so it's tough to really send pressure. So the front four definitely has to do their job.
They are okay with 3 yarding you on first and second down, mm-hmm. and then managing third and short situations. I mean, and when you think that you've come up, you know, when you try to adjust your defense for Hunt and his success in those shorter passes, he is not afraid to take his shots then. And I think the real difference right now with Alex Smith is he's hitting those deep shots right now. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, that seems to that him converting maybe a handful more third down and longs, throwing for those chains instead of, you know, just give up downs and walking off. To me, that is the difference with Alex Smith this year.
No, I think you're absolutely right. But also, when your running back is averaging 6 yards a carry, it probably helps the quarterback out quite a little bit too.
Yeah, I mean, because I mean, look at what you can do on second and four. I mean. Mm-hmm. You can do anything that you want. You can take your deep shots then. You can do your stuff with Tyreek Hill. And oh yeah, you can hand the ball off to Hunt as well. You can do that stuff with Kelce in the backfield. As well. I mean, how do you stop this out of base?
You just have to play a good technique. You have to read your keys. You can't get sucked in by that window dressing, but you have to respect it at the same time. It's a really kind of probably fine line for this defense to walk. But you can't get eaten up on first down the way that the Chiefs have done it to defenses, the way the Steelers have been chewed up on first down before. So, like you said, kind of an obvious point, but certainly a critical one.
I think you have to make Hunt earn anything he gets in this game. Between the guards.
Yeah, you got to rally to him. You can't have one guy try to bring him down. He's too good. He's going to either, you know, shed the tackle or he's going to fall forward. So you got to get hats to the football. I mean, you know, I think I once read a good mark of a run defense is, you know, after the runner's down, look at how many guys are within 5 yards of the football. Do a little 5-yard box around. And if you have a lot of hats there, you probably have a good run defense. If you don't have a whole lot of hats there, your run defense probably sucks. So you got to have effort and you got to rally to the football. Because it's going to take 2-3 guys to bring Kareem Hunt down.
True or false? The Steelers need at least force one turnover in this game to win it.
True, I think. You got to get Kansas City off their game plan a little bit. So, yeah, I think you need at least one.
Do they have to have two? Do they have to get two turnovers in this game?
No, but if you're going to get just one turnover, Steelers can't turn the ball over at all. They got to win the turnover battle by at least plus one, I think.
And explosive plays for the Steelers offense. They have to have at least 5 of them. Yes?
Yeah, I mean, you got to get something. I'm just happy with one, you know, to start and go from there. But yeah, you got and you can give up. You can throw the deep ball in this Kansas City team. I think they're allowing the most passes of 40 plus. I want to say it's 7. I'm pretty sure it's 7. No one else is allowing more than 5. So even Marcus Peters is giving up the deep ball. You know, Pryor hit him for 44 yards 2 weeks ago on that Sunday or Monday night game. So you can't throw the deep ball. And I think that as much as fans might not like to see it, the Steelers are going to take some deep shots because the Chiefs are vulnerable to that.
Is this a game the Steelers can win?
Yes, they can. They on paper they can look good in every game. So I don't discount that chance. But obviously, will they? It's a different story.
All right, we are about an hour into this thing. David and I normally do our weekly picks, so we're pushing that to the side this week. I'll post them. I'll get them from David before the weekend and post them Sunday morning and all. So let's talk about the outcome of the Steelers game. Last year, I think I picked against the Steelers in the divisional round of the playoffs, and they won. I don't have a lot of good reasons to pick the Steelers in this game, to be quite honest with you. I really don't. I mean, even if the Steelers play up offensively the way, you know, the way we think they can, this thing could still end up being a, you know, 31-28 game, if you will. I don't think it's going to go that high. Look, this is not a must-win game for the Steelers. It is a big game and one you would like to win for obvious reasons. It's not must-win. Coming off of the performance of Jacksonville, however, if you look back last year, you know, drubbed by a team in the Philadelphia Eagles that they should have beat on the road. They didn't do it. They bounced back against Chiefs defense at Heinz Field in I believe, a night game there and just put it on them. I'm going to do something I shouldn't do that I'm probably going to regret. I think the Steelers
not win. The first time you said that.
Yeah. Normally I'd follow that by hold my beer in the past. I think the Steelers win this, Alex, and I think they win this by 10 or more points. I have no good reason to say that. I'll put it to you that way. And I'm not going to be surprised if it works out the other way. I just got a feeling that this, you know, you get Gilbert back. If they're able to run the football like I think they're able to do, if they're able to just not give up those chunk run plays in this game, force a turnover, then I think this can snowball on Kansas City, and we've seen Kansas City get kind of snowballed on before as well. I'm not going to defend it. Consider it my bold prediction of the week. I'm going to say Steelers 27, Chiefs 16.
Wow. So this is not your stone cold lock of the century of the week?
No. Like I said, consider this just one of those gut feelings, and I don't know if it's just because I'm hungry or what. I think they're going to be able to move the football, and it's going to come down to red zone and being able to get in the end zone there. And if they can a couple times, and especially early, look, it would have changed the complexion of that game against Jacksonville if you go down there, on that first red zone and score. Mm-hmm. The sooner you get the opposing offense out of what they like to do, the better. And if they can get the Chiefs away from running the football at some point during the game, doesn't have to be early, but make Alex Smith start trying to win a game for you, your odds increase drastically. So, yeah, the heck with it. I'm going against the grain here.
Well, Dave, we share the same gut because I was honestly thinking the same thing, is that I don't really have any good evidence for it, and it's a totally irrational thought, but the Steelers always play well when the chips are down, when teams are counting them out. They've been able to win at Arrowhead in the past, which I think is important. They've shown that they can do so. Obviously, they did it last year. So I'm with you. I don't think it's going to be as wide a margin. I think it's going to be a super tight game. I'll go 24-21, but I'll take the Steelers, and I have no good reason to do so. But it just, they surprise you sometimes. They disappoint you when you expect them to play well. They surprise you when you expect them to play a little poorly.
Yeah, and, we'll obviously be labeled as homers because of this. But, like I said, it's just a gut feeling on this. Now, you heard David Todd and I the other day say, if the Steelers somehow win this game, and I wrote this on Twitter this week too, are there going to be some yeah buts?
I don't think there should be any. I'm with what I think David Todd said, that if you get the win, no matter how you get it, I don't care if you win this game 3-0, I don't care if you win this game 58-55, just walk out with the victory. I think that'll calm everything, because that's a really good Chiefs team, and just to get a win at Kansas City, I don't care how you do it.
All right, what if it's yeah, but Tyreek Hill didn't play?
I don't care if they field Tyler Palko out there at quarterback. I just want to get the victory, and I think that'll calm everything down.
All right. I still stand by it that David Todd and I will get into a yeah, but. and hopefully we are getting into a yeah, but scenario here. What's the worst thing that can happen here this week? Other than a loss, obviously.
Sure.
Is it more offensive red zone struggles? Is it Ben throwing three interceptions? Is it Le'Veon carrying it 20 times for 3.2? What is it?
I think it's with Ben. If the Chiefs come out and play a lot of man coverage like I expect them to, and Ben continues to struggle and guys continue to not do a great job of getting open, that's going to be the continued blueprint of how to shut down the Steelers offense that has been shut down the first 5 weeks, is play a lot of man coverage, force those tight throws. I think David Todd and I agree pretty heavily, because I know David has said that Ben works best against man coverage. I think he's awful against man coverage. I think that's his kryptonite, cover one and two man. I think it's been proven time and time again. I know Sean for the site's done the stats, really good job every week. And you look at his lowest completion percentage, it's against cover one. If you look at, you know, what time does AB get the ball the most, it's against cover one, because Ben doesn't know where to go with the football. Guys aren't open. He's not comfortable with it. So it's just force feeds the ball to AB. And the Chiefs run a lot of cover one. So that's my biggest concern, is that Ben will continue to struggle with that. Other defenses will see that. It's pretty easy to see. And they'll just run cover one against the Steelers all year long.
How is this weekly mini drama been affecting this team, or has it?
I mean, I don't know. It may be a little, but there's distractions for players every week, whether it's just in your life, your day-to-day stuff. I mean, you can't carry that stuff with you. And these guys, you know, have gone through a lot in their lives and usually don't carry that stuff. So I think it's overblown by the media to give something to write about. I don't think Bell getting into a feud with Ryan Clark's going to hinder him once he takes on the field against Kansas City. It's just, you know, how could it?
Where are you at on the concern meter heading into this game?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly concern there. You just keep waiting for the game where everything kind of clicks. And in games where one area has clicked, the other hasn't. And there's certainly been games where nothing's clicked well. Kansas City is a great team. We haven't even really talked about the special teams unit. You know, Dave Taubes, the best special teams coach in the league. Danny Smith, a close second, by the way. But no, they're a well-coached team. They're going to take care of the football. And the only thing that gives me comfort is that the AFC North is so bad that this is still an easily winnable AFC North, because there's not a whole lot of competition. So even if you lose this one, you can still capture the North, and who knows what happens from there.
You heard David and I talk a couple podcasts ago about these next three games. What could and what should happen if the Steelers lose these next three, or if they lose the right two of them?
Oh, man, I don't know. I'll cross that bridge if we come to it, and hopefully we don't. But obviously, you got some big problems if they lose these next three.
Could you potentially see an offensive coordinator change
going potentially into the bye? Yeah, I mean, if it goes that south, I mean, it would be unprecedented, really, for them to do. But, hey, the Bengals fire their offensive coordinator, and they never do stuff like that. So, you know, I don't discount anything if things get that bad.
Obviously, the key game is the Bengals. You got to win your divisional games, and you would think that even though it's several weeks out, you would hope they'd be able to hang and potentially beat the Lions. I mean, if you go, let's say you go 2-1 with your one loss being the Chiefs in the next three games, you're still in good shape, right?
Yeah, you're still going to be in control of the AFC North. You beat Baltimore again, you know, odds are you're going to be fine.
All right. Any final thoughts? Good to have you back on the show again, by the way.
Yeah, good to be back. I think we've covered it well. It's going to be no matter what happens, it's going to be a tough game. Steelers have to play a really strong game. It's not a whole lot of margin for error against a team like the Chiefs, because if you screw up, they'll definitely make you pay.
All right, we have a lot more headed your way on Steelers Depot. We got some offensive and defensive previews up by Alex and the gang today. Some matchups to watch coming as well throughout the weekend leading up to the game. As always, and we invite you on game day to participate in the game day threads. Matthew Marksey does a fantastic job of live blogging. Nobody doesn't like him, in my opinion. Those threads usually go, sometimes 1,000 or more comments in there. So I invite everybody to stop by the site and say hello as well. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow Alex Cazora at Alex_Cazora. You can email me and Alex and David and let us know how crazy we are for picking the Steelers this week. TheTerriblePodcast@gmail.com. As always, if you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button upper right navigational bar. Alex, I appreciate you sitting in for David. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.